I'm the author with the cartoonist Joe Sacco of Days of Destruction, Days of Revolt. And when Joe and I are in New York, we always listen to WBAI 99.5 or WBAI.org because we want to stay informed and not get fed the commercial lies of the corporate media.
That was the kind of world we'd made.
For you, we hope you like them. The first was 2-4, gentlemen. Here we go. 2-4, Quebec. Ah.
Thank you. suggested hurry up with that transmission. I want to go to France. I suggest that you reach deep down inside yourself there and try and find something that'll keep you awake just a little while longer, because this transmission coming up may just rekindle your will to live.
It feels like times have changed.
Hello, Mike. I can hear you. Night shift.
How does it feel?
It feels like times have changed.
Night shifts.
This is going to be just a little bit unpleasant. Don't move. Stay very still.
My people. Now, where are my people? 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 Where are my people?
Oh my goodness, it's nuts.
Where are my people? The 70 billion people of Earth, where are they hiding?
First one is 2-4, gentlemen.
Here we go. 2-4, Quebec.
It's time.
Oh, my goodness. It's time for night shift.
Swear they're not human.
It's time somebody
that was the kind of world we'd made. 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 World we'd
made. Closing of places of entertainment. All cinemas, theaters, and other places of entertainment are to be closed immediately until further notice. Sports gatherings and all gatherings for purposes of entertainment and amusement, whether outdoor or indoor, which involve large numbers congregating together, are prohibited until further notice. This refers especially to gatherings for purposes of entertainment. But people are earnestly requested not to crowd together unnecessarily in any circumstances.
Thank you. goodness. Hello. It's the night shift.
Everything that you do, everything that happens in your life is political.
And you don't think it's time somebody had a dream again, huh?
That we're going to have revolution by any means necessary. We have to begin to define the means that are necessary.
Think it's time somebody had a dream again, huh?
It's time.
Night shift.
It only happens
once a week. In your heart and listen.
Mondays.
Midnight. To what I'm thinking? 3 a.m. We're with you.
The name of the show.
Night Shift.
How long has it been since you slept?
I don't know. It's funny. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
Politics concerns everything that you do. Everything that happens in your life is political.
Just might leave.
Oh, baby, let me go, yeah.
consider ourselves as the authors of new justice. And wherever we find injustice and tyranny, we must stamp it. We must kill it. The world belongs to the youth. Our job is to seize that and to make the world more humane.
Look at that. I touch it a smile.
You're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio.
I have no idea why I'm here. I don't know what I'm doing, you know, talking about this. I saw something, they saw something. There was a lot of light. That's all I know.
It's an invisible barrier. Keeps anyone from getting out. It's designed to keep me inside, but it keeps everyone else in too. I'm sorry.
Elena Foldrum.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I'm hot.
Yes.
And I'm happy.
You're hot and you're happy. Okay, well, I just want to say you are tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. This is Night Shift. We have a number of things. We have a live interview with an very interesting guest. I think it fits into the Life is Like Science Fiction category.
Genre.
His name is Brian DeFlores, and he's originally a truck driver, but he was abducted. And you know what I mean by abducted. And once he was abducted, his life was changed. He was able to tap into a artistic talent that he never knew he had. Not only did he not know that he had this, but this artistic talent allows others, upon viewing it, to tap into their galactic potential. So, We'll talk about that. I'll read some of that to you to set you up, because life is like science fiction. And just, I ask that you open your mind and embrace what we're going to talk about. It sounds like it could be, you know, gobbledygook, or, you know, crackpot, or genius.
Could be eclectic.
Who knows? The thing is that all things are possible. We have seen it. We have seen it all. Things that you never would have thought possible. Bill Cosby could be a complete sex predator. Who would have thought that? That's Life is Like Science Fiction to me. Anyway, and that was Bill Cosby at the beginning of the show, from his album, Bill Cosby Talks to Kids About Drugs. Yes. It is what I would call dripping with irony. Okay?
So, it isn't pudding.
It isn't. Oh, stop. Now, I do have a few Life is Like Science Fiction titles that we're going to talk about. Just the first one here. I'll just read this to you. And this is interesting because I like the idea that a scientist pondered this. Will the first aliens we find be robots? Intelligent life may have turned to AI by the time we make first contact. This is what an expert claims. You with that, Alina?
Totally.
I mean, like Gort Klaatu Maringa. You know, if you don't know what that means, that means you never saw a day there stood still where this giant robot came with an alien to warn us of what we're going to do to the planet. Anyway, so there it is. Dr. Susan Schneider from the University of Connecticut says the first intelligent aliens we find might not be biological. Now, we're going to have a guest who, of course, has been abducted, so we can ask him exactly what the whole deal is with the alien thing. And
did he date?
Well, here's the thing. Here's what I'll posit to you. Art. What does art do? What is its function? We know art can be used as therapy. We know that art...
Stimulation.
It's for stimulation. It can inspire you to do your own art. But can it inspire you on a spiritual level? Can you look at a picture of someplace and want to go there? Can you look at a painting and connect to something that's genetically within you? Who knows? Because here's the deal. Why does music affect us the way it does? We don't understand the science of music. Why can you write a piece of music that is sad and it'll make you feel sad versus something that, you know, what do those sounds have to do with each other? All right, so I just say this a lot. We don't understand that we take for granted. And so I'm asking you to open your mind, Alina.
I will try.
Are you going to open up your mind?
I will open many things here tonight.
That would be exciting. We should start streaming. So stay tuned. Tonight Shift. This is such a good cut. I have to play it again. I played it last week. I have to play it again. Are you listening to this, Alina?
I am.
Are you taking this all in?
I'm totally absorbing
it. I think
every single
Lance,
opening you told
you like
me
this
to
track,
open.
Right? You're with this track, right? It's like you're with it. It takes you somewhere.
Lance is there.
And you can like us on Facebook. As you follow us on Facebook, some of the music that we're playing will appear on our Facebook page, and Lance will tell you and tap you in. And if you want to go to Brian DeFlores' site right now just to get a preview of what it is that we're going to be talking about in about 15 minutes or so, you can do that as well. And we're going to be taking calls. You can ask questions yourself. So prepare yourself for a ride into the fantastic.
A bumpy or smooth ride, whatever you want.
Yes, but you love me. Night shift again. I'll be damn late.
Anyway, Elena.
Yes.
So, life is like science fiction. Now, do you have any thoughts on aliens? Do you believe in aliens?
Yes, I actually have an inkling.
Have you had an encounter or something?
No, I have not had an encounter, but I have studied it.
You've studied it? You've studied what?
The existence, the facts. They seem to like be congruent with things that could actually occur. And I came in as a skeptic. I think I've talked about this before a long time ago.
I don't remember any of this.
That's all right. It was back in school, and I actually took a UFO class.
You took a UFO class? What college did you go to? You take a UFO class?
Temple University.
Excuse me. Is this true, Lance? Do you know anything about this? Is there a UFO class being offered at your college? Thank you. All right, go ahead, Elena. You took a UFO class.
Yes, it was called UFOs in America.
Was it taught by a human?
Actually, yes, he was very intelligent. Okay. As far as I know, he was complete human. He had not been abducted, but experience.
As far as you know, he was a complete human.
As far as I know.
But so, he had alien experience.
Except that he didn't ask me out for dinner, but
okay. Well, he'd already had alien experience. Once you go alien, you never go back. But define alien experience for me, please.
He had more like ghost encounter type things. Not where our guest, that's going to go into much further detail.
So in other words, he was aware that there's more to things than what we can perceive in our natural, you know, our normal senses, in other words.
Yes. And then he did, you know, numerous studies in Roswell and all that, and he was able to, you know, I noticed that it was like an auditorium class. So everybody wanted to be in this particular class at that time.
This is in Temple University, at UFO class.
Yes. UFOs in America. And everybody wanted to go.
UFOs in America.
And the unusual thing, too, was that with auditorium classes, I mean, unlike even intimate classes where you're in a small classroom, but the auditorium classes, you notice over the semester that, you know, students start to dwindle. They don't show up. you know, it was an early morning class. You don't get noticed for not showing up.
Right.
That never was the case at this class.
Really? People, like, everybody that came came to all the whole classes. That's fascinating.
You would think a Journey was playing.
Well, you would think Journey was playing. But that's pretty fascinating, Elena. That's pretty fascinating. And so, taking the UFOs in America class, you took this as an elective, and you weren't majoring in UFOs, right?
No.
Okay.
Not in my curriculum. Elsewhere.
You know, I'm just asking. All right, you took this UFOs in America, and, mm-hmm. and you went in as a skeptic, but you came out a believer.
Absolutely. Actually, you cannot say it any more simply than that. And then, you know, I'm not grandstanding or trying to, like,
I'd like to see you grandstand about the aliens. I'd like to see that, Elena.
Maybe another show.
I really would. Like, no, they exist! They're coming! No,
I would
like to see you grandstanding.
I went in with, like, the fascination. It was one of my latter years, so I thought, no, I wasn't trying to get an easy grade. I just was fascinated with
Let me ask you, the understanding you walked away with, do you have any sense of why they're here? Why are they making contact, or why they haven't made more direct contact? Those are two questions. Are they here? And why have they not made more definitive contact?
Well, you can ask that about anyone. You can ask that about anyone in the studio or anyone outside the studio.
Like, why is Lance here and why has he not been here more?
Exactly. Why am I here? I mean...
Are you Byron now?
Without this... It doesn't necessarily mean about the species. Have I made, like, an impact on you know, the universe? No.
So you're saying that they could be here making an impact, we're just not aware of it.
Or not making an impact. Doesn't mean that I do not exist because I'm not making an impact on the universe.
I am not saying that they don't exist because they haven't made a visible impact. I'm asking, what's your theory? A, are they here among us now? And B, why have they not made their presence known?
And I'm trying to answer that question.
Oh, okay, I'm trying.
And to reiterate my point, like, what kind of presence are you asking for?
Like, I don't know, a show?
I mean, a
reality show?
Well, I mean, Bill and Jane could be living, you know, two blocks down. Do you know that they really exist?
You mean like Third Rock from the Sun?
Oh, no, I don't want to go there. That show was ridiculous. But,
Well, Elena, you're doing a very good job being the Byron in this show. I'm with you. I commend you. I mean, commend you for just taking on that role.
To reiterate my question, my answer, like, two blocks down or, you know, in Brooklyn or, you know, or North Carolina, you don't necessarily know they exist. Does that mean they don't?
I just have a tip for you, Elena. Asking a question is not necessarily answering a question, just so you know.
I know, but it makes it easier for me.
It makes it easier for you. You could throw me off the trail, be like, well, you know, why is there, well, you know, why is there sun? I mean, why?
And
why?
We can banter back and forth.
Why is there one?
I'm not being that...
Glib?
Glib, well, okay, if you want to use such a harsh word, but
Is glib a harsh word? I thought that was a nice, friendly, orangey-yellow word. Glib.
I could have said
dodgy. I could have said dodgy. That's a lot grayer. I could have said...
dodgy is cowardice.
Yeah, I didn't say that. I said glib. I said glib. Much more happy, upbeat.
How about more insightful?
Oh, is this insight we're getting here? Let me prepare myself. Okay.
All right.
All right, so how do I know that my neighbor is not an alien? I don't, but I'm asking, after taking the class, what's your perspective?
Okay, so after taking the class... If you want to go, like, A, B, C, and be more concrete, that's where this... And obviously, I'm not doing a very good job in reiterating...
Don't use we, they, our, anything. Just keep it personal. Elena thinks, any of that...
Elena thinks she's beautiful, but let's move on.
No, Elena, you're beautiful. I just wanted to get a beautiful answer from you. How's that?
The professor in this particular class...
Oh, my God. You're still not talking about yourself. Go ahead. I'm listening.
Moved me, first person. So where I did go
when you say moved you, you don't mean he changed your seat.
He changed my seat in a matter of, like, what, 3 months of the class.
Okay.
Whereas I was like, really, this is just going to be good, you know, good hop and fun. But as it evolved, I felt like you know, there's some merit to this. And he had, you know, a diagram type scenario where there it was difficult to find any holes in his explanations.
Okay, Elena?
Mm-hmm.
Elena.
Yes.
I'm just going to kind of drill you to the wall here, okay?
All right.
And pretend my hand is around your throat, okay? And I've pushed you against the wall, okay? And I'm asking you, Elena.
Then an alien will save me.
Are they here among us now? And why have they not made their presence more known? Quickly. I'm choking you. You're going
to
die.
Why would they need to?
Oh, like that. You just, I'm going to have to kill you. Veins are popping out on your head.
Well, that's okay.
All right.
It will save me, Elena, makeup tips.
I'm glad that you cannot give an answer because, you know, I see that Byron and you have been getting together on the weekends and he clearly has influenced you.
Maybe he's an alien. Who knows?
Well, no, Byron is clear. What do you mean maybe he's an alien? Where's the doubt in the fact that Byron is an alien?
One question to you then. Let's ping pong back and forth. One more question.
Ping pong back and forth. Okay. Can I ask you a question with a question?
Sure.
Okay.
Fair is fair. In Love and War. So what would it take for you to, like, say, what would be, you know, where they would have to make their presence?
Like, what would it take for me to believe that?
Do they need to start wearing T-shirts and go to more, like, you know, symposiums? Or what would be, like, satisfactory to you to say that, yes, they're here? And what kind of contribution would you expect them to do?
That's a ridiculous question for you to ask me because I think everybody would have pretty much the same answer. But I understand, Elena. We will get back to that. We'll get back to that. Because
now that is like science fiction.
Listen to me. Maybe
you understand.
Maybe having a guest like... Now, first of all, I totally believe that aliens are here and among us. And as a matter of fact, I'm pretty sure you're an alien, Elena. But
well, of course.
I do want to bring this guest on and I want to get a sense of the cosmic, which is what we try to do here at Night Shift. Because here's the deal. If nothing else, we know that what you can conceive in your mind, and all higher spirituality tells you this, what you conceive in your mind can become reality. We've seen it. We've seen things from movies and TV shows become what we have. We have iPads like the things in Next Generation and 2001 A Space Odyssey. We have cell phones like Star Trek communicators. Anything that can be conceived can pretty much be created at this point. So it is conceivable that what we believe is out there is out there. And more. Do you not agree, Elena?
I agree.
And isn't that why you're here on the show? Because you believe in aliens?
No, I believe in me and you.
And you believe I'm an alien?
No, you don't have to be an alien for
what
me
about
to believe
Lance?
You.
I think Lance might be an alien.
Well, he's a cutie pie with that hat on, but...
You like the hat. You know what I realized? That people wear, like, the knit hat. It's like they wear it like it, they just threw it on, but they didn't. They made it, they'd like, that's the look. Like, you place it on very specifically to make it look like you just threw it on your head.
So what is your hat doing? That's alien in.
WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift. I'm here with Elena Fuldrum.
You look like a big pin.
She'll be running for office. All right, I've been speaking about what our next guest is going to be. His name is Brian DeFlores, and I'm going to read from his bio that's online. And I think that this pretty much speaks for itself, and I myself am very anxious to talk to him. It says, for the majority of his young life, Brian DeFlores worked as a truck driver. He worked his job, earned his pay, and lived what most people would call a normal life. On December 4th, 1996, Brian experienced a dramatic shift in consciousness, resulting in a complete change of lifestyle, work, and location. Brian states, it was like I was struck by lightning, and literally overnight, I had this ability to create these incredible images. Now, Brian is a painter, let me just pause to say, and he does all kinds of very interesting geometric shapes and colors and clearly beings that are humanoid and star systems and whatnot. And so, I'm just going to pause it because you can't see it and this is radio, but you can go to his site and see it, briandeflores.com. He says, I was completely amazed and I had absolutely no idea where this came from or what was happening to me. During this experience, Brian became aware of his life's purpose. Since that time, Brian has created thousands of transformational templates whose content and style continually evolve. Brian refers to his artwork as transformational art, in that the viewer actually experiences a shift emotionally, energetically, and even physically. When asked where he draws his inspiration from, Brian cites the whimsical work of Walt Disney and the scientific drawings of Da Vinci. Brian continues, in addition, I draw a lot of my own inspiration from films, musical genres, from classical to trance, which clearly you can get listening to the show, and nighttime celestial events such as comets and meteor showers. Brian had found his life calling. He created a business with his art, traveling, teaching, and selling his artwork worldwide. Although there are many talented artists in the world, Brian is truly unique in that his artwork transforms the viewer and works energetically as well as visually. Brian's art has helped thousands of people around the world from different walks of life overcome adversity, illness, abundance issues, depression, and numerous other challenges and ailments. At the heart, the art of Brian DeFlores is a healing tool. So, Brian DeFlores, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Wow, Brian, okay. I have a million questions for you, you can imagine. So, welcome to WBAI. Welcome to Night Shift.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay. So, my first question to you is, now, prior to this event, you know, you said you had a fairly normal life. What was your sense of art, artistic expression, and did you have any sense of purpose in your life?
No more so than, I guess, the regular individual. And my life was not fairly normal. It was really normal, I would say. I didn't really focus on art, or I wasn't interested in UFOs or anything of that nature, or science fiction or ascended masters or anything of that nature. I was just going along. I had various jobs. I was a truck driver for a living for a while. I had various odd jobs as well. And then in 1996, all of that changed, and I had this huge kind of an epiphany experience that changed every aspect of my life, literally within 6 hours, and I was a completely different person. And I began my journey into art and into other dimensional realms.
All right, well, I have to ask you, tell me a little bit about this. Set us up now. Where were you? What were you doing? And what, to your best ability, happened?
Well, I had awakened that morning, and I was feeling kind of strange. I had a strange feeling in my body. I had different thoughts in my mind, and as the day progressed, as I was at work, the day progressed, I started kind of expanding. That's kind of how I can describe it. I'm sure many of your listeners have had some type of experience like this, although maybe not as dramatic. But as the day went on, I was having all these expanded thoughts, and I felt like I was changing on some level. I was 35 years old. I had lived a good life up until then, and I felt like my life was changing very dramatically. And so I was thinking, it's kind of crazy thoughts, like, oh well, I'm just not going to go to work tomorrow. I think I'm done with that job. I'd like to do something else. And again, as the day progressed, I began, connecting interdimensionally, I guess, although I didn't know it then. But I went to the beach later that day, and I had this really expanded experience of, I guess you could call it the cosmos or the universe. And then I went to bed that night, and everything changed when I woke up in the morning.
So in other words, your experience was on, not on a physical level, but it was on a physiological / spiritual level, where you just started receiving thoughts or awareness that you never previously had.
Yes, that's true. And possibly I had, picked up bits of this information from my life in certain areas, but I had this awareness of it all in one moment. I had been raised, in a middle-class family, in Southern California. I was raised Catholic, and, I went to, catechism and all of that, and I was never really prepared for what happened to me at that point. And like I said, I think many of your listeners have had some type of an awakening experience where they just change direction in their life, in one moment. Sometimes without even just a thought, they're just kind of like, okay, I'm done with this. I'm going to move on to, this next level of my life. And I was kind of stepping into the unknown at that point. And I willingly did that. It was spiritual, but it was also physical in nature. I also experienced physical sensations in my body. I actually grew about 2.5 inches in 3 days.
Wow.
And my shoe size went up as well, about 2 sizes within about 2 or 3 days. So I was experiencing tangible physical anomalies as well.
So you had physical manifestations of growth as well as the spiritual and mental manifestations. That's very interesting. Now let me ask you this. You said this happened, this awareness grew, this let's say a confluence of epiphanies. What made you pin this on aliens as opposed to something completely, religious? Yeah, something religious.
Well, I actually had an experience later that night where I woke up in my bedroom, and I actually had it wasn't a vision. It felt like it was actual people in my bedroom, but I wasn't shocked or afraid or anything like that. Yeah, I was just like, oh, okay, who are these people? And there was a woman and there was 2 men as far as I could see. But again, even though I didn't know them from my life, my current life, I was just very relaxed. And then when I looked at them closer, I realized there was something odd about them. And then I realized that possibly they were not from this planet. And then there ensued a dialogue between us, and it was very normal and very natural. Again, I wasn't actually shocked or surprised. It was very normal to me at that point, even though I didn't have any of those experiences in my life previous to that.
All right, so it's 18 years later. What is your take then on what happened to you, and do you believe other people experienced things like this, and why do you think you were chosen? Is it just a question of fate, wavelength? What's your take?
Well, I think it's a case of destiny, and I think all of us have a great destiny on this planet, and we have we're meant to have experiences. I believe we also have what they call soul contracts, as people have said. And again, I've gathered this through my 18 years, but when I look back, I can really articulate the experience and the situation pretty well. It's how far do you want to go with this down the rabbit hole? But actually, I again had dialogue with these beings, and they were very direct with me, and they said, your soul contract is about to expire here in April of 1997, and you'll be leaving the planet, and we would like to help you by offering you an extra term here on Earth, as it were. And they told me I had artistic talents from past lives on other planets. And they even went on to tell me that I was an artist on other worlds, on other planets, just as many other people are here, maybe musicians here on Earth. They've possibly been musicians or architects or mechanically inclined on other worlds as well. And so they told me that I had come to Earth and I had brought all these talents with me, although they were dormant. And they would help me to awaken and activate these talents, which they did literally overnight. And within about 3 or 4 hours, I was drawing these complex images. And when they were coming through, I had really no idea at the beginning what the images were. I had no clue about sacred geometry or anything of that nature. And some of the first images that came through were very complex. They were very colorful. I really liked them, but I didn't actually know what they were or how they were coming through at that point.
Okay, so, we're going to be jumping back and forth a little bit here in terms of what was happening to you at the time and then your perspective now. And my question to you is, in terms of from going through this experience and being so clear about it, what and being told that you've been an artist on other worlds and other times, what is the role of the artist in your estimation in society, and what is the role of art in our lives?
Well, I think it has many facets. Again, for me, it was to lift consciousness, to lift and upgrade consciousness, to help people. And I mean, that's what most of my artwork does, is it triggers upgrades within people in their consciousness, and it helps with all of, you know, life's challenges that we have here on Earth, whether it's financial challenges or health challenges, or creativity challenges, or problems with relationships, or attracting those things to you. And so my initial images that came through, again, were really complex geometry images that helped to upgrade the DNA system, expand brain capacity, open people to creativity. And so my artwork is kind of focused on that. With other artists, I perceive that everyone has, again, a destiny, and everyone's job description is a little bit different. Like yours is currently broadcasting. You're a communicator. So your job description is to communicate to the people, to bring new information. And with the artist, in a lot of ways, it's to communicate as well, but through a different medium. And each artist has a different, like I said, job description, even on a spiritual level. And so mine is to address any challenges that the human is going through on this planet, and to just make life a little bit easier.
So you're saying you have art that can actually help us heal and or transform our earthly problems?
Yes. Excuse me, I was drinking some water there. Yes, I do. And again, that's been my focus. I guess I have other artist friends as well, and their focuses and their purposes are a little bit different.
Sure.
For me, I'll wake up in the morning and I'll sense an image coming through. I'll just get up and I'll be walking around having my coffee, and I'll actually have what I consider to be a radio signal from somewhere else coming into my mind, and that radio signal actually turns into a video signal after about 10 minutes. So the radio signal, I feel it coming in, and I feel maybe, or I sense high and low pitched sounds in my ears, and it'll get stronger, and then it'll eventually turn into a video signal, which it'll show me a bunch of images, and they're being projected at me from other dimensions. So in a sense, I'm a radio transmitter in a way, and receiver. I receive information, and I actually see the images that you can see on my website. I see them moving like holograms, and then I'll sit down, and sure, we'll go into this process, but I sit down, and when I start drawing the image, I can actually see it appear on the piece of paper or whatever I'm working on before I even draw it. And a lot of the time I'm just taking...
So you're like a vessel.
Yes.
Well, you know, yes. It's interesting because what you're describing, many artists, I myself am an artist and I went to art school, high school, art college, so I'm with you on the whole process of art. And many artists can describe art as connecting to a higher self. It's almost like meditation where the art comes through them, whether it's painting or music or poetry or whatever it is. And so my question to you, and this is a perspective question, do you feel that art is a connection to a higher self or to a higher intelligence or to aliens or to this destiny that you think that if we're lucky enough, we have?
Well, I do think it's a question of luck, but I think it's also a question of when you receive the call, whatever, by spirit, or when you feel that higher calling come in, that you actually act on it. And as you act on it, your personal and spiritual growth begins as well. And you can go just a short distance with that, or you can go out on a limb, say, like I did, or take it all the way. And for me, I'm an Aries astrological sign, so we tend to just take it all and run forward, and that's basically what I did. So from 18 years ago, I've actually charted my personal growth through this artwork. And again, I have other friends and other artists as well who take it to the limit and go 100% with it, or they'll just take a little bit of it at a time. I guess it just depends on people's personalities and their astrological signs, how they assimilate the energy and how far they want to go with it.
Excuse me. All right, well, let me ask you a little bit here. You have on your site one of the things you talk about, and I'm just going to read from this, and then I want you to expand a little bit. You talk about working with accelerator templates, and you talk about the artwork specifically, which is fascinating to me. And you have under the artwork, scientific technologies for evolving consciousness. It says here, the channeled art pieces accelerators contained on this website are scientific off-planet technologies designed to trigger a dramatic reconfiguration of our consciousness. The images combine sacred geometry, multi-layered mathematical configurations, and specific light code sequences to activate, heal, and balance the human body and energy symptoms. And it says very simply, the images will start to shift and upgrade your consciousness the moment you connect with them in their highly energized printed form. Now, let me ask you, for you, you said, you know, you right away you started doing these complex drawings. How did you evolve to the style? Like, what do you paint? Do you use acrylics? Did you start with pencil? How did you, tell me a little bit of your journey into finding the proper materials to express the creativity that's channeling through you?
Well, it's kind of been a fascinating journey because when I began, about 16 or 17 different styles came through initially in the first few days, and I was even amazed because, again, these beings told me that I had been an artist on other planets, so obviously I was getting evidence of that in the first few days. I had all of these different styles. There was a black and white style that looked like it was from the Renaissance period. There was also kind of a rubbing technique that came through that I was told was from ancient Greece. Then there were other different styles and different techniques and different materials that I was using in the first few days. And I guess that was to determine, or for me to help determine, what style would be best for this modern age. And since we were going into, you know, the modern age of technology is when I started, you know, at its height, that part of the artwork would reflect modern technology, and so also galactic technology. And so the artwork itself.
Galactic technology.
Yes. You want me to explain that a little bit?
Oh, please. Come on. You can't just say galactic technology.
You need that a little.
Yeah, let me just move past that. And then the galactic, hand me that piano. All right, get it.
Yeah, so my artwork is actually more than artwork. It's technology. There's many... if you look at the images themselves, there's a face image which you see, but there's also other energetic templates behind that. Sometimes 50 to 100 templates behind the image that are actually accelerating it and making it energetically, integratable for the human. So that's what the art actually does something.
Well,
so the galactic. Go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead, because I have questions.
Okay. So the galactic technology part of it is that there are etheric components or energetic components of this artwork, which makes it different in a way from some other types of artwork. As you're looking at the piece of art, that's just one template you're seeing. But if you look at it further, if you gaze at the details, then other aspects of it begin to open up. And those other aspects are energetic or etheric in nature. Your mind starts to expand. People have, initially, almost immediately when I started showing the first images to people, I got reactions that I was not prepared for. People were, one person actually almost fainted when they saw it. Because some of this artwork has not been seen on this planet for a long time, for thousands of years. And so there's all sorts of physical reactions that people have to it. And people, it reminds people of home, too. They don't quite know where they remember it, but it reminds them of an age or a world that they may have lived on before. A lot of the pieces contain the light language as well. So that's part of the galactic mechanics behind the images, is that I think they speak to all cultures on the planet, because there's really no English writing on those images, on most of the images, and there's over 13,000 images at this point after 18 years. And sometimes I was drawing 10 images a day. Again, 16 styles came through, but then one style was chosen, which is you can see a few of the different styles come through a little bit, but the main style is the accelerator style with the darker background and the light coming through with the Prismacolor pencil and all of that. That's the main style that was chosen, and that really works. It's continued to work for 18 years, and it's just getting bigger and bigger. So.
All right. Well, you said so many things that I have questions about galactic mechanics. You talk about color theory. And one thing or a few things come to mind. And the two main things I want to ask you here are, are there we only understand color, but so much. We understand our visual spectrum of color. Are you saying that color and its use and use of form and space has... there's an aspect to galactic mechanics, meaning there are many artists who may not have the presence of mind that you do that have done art that have affected and moved people. Is this just part of the what art is able to do? And like you said, you happen to have a job where you have enough of an understanding that you can do this to create that. Has this changed your perspective on color and art, period?
Does it have an elastic capability?
Well, don't ask him another question, right? All right.
Yes. So. I think that it's all about frequency, too, and frequency is part of the galactic mechanical part. And I'm sure that I've seen a lot of other artists. I really enjoy other artists, especially, even conscious artists, or maybe they're even channeling...
Conscious artists as opposed to unconscious artists.
Well, yeah, but a lot of unconscious art is being channeled as well. So I think all artists are channeling in some way things from their past, Even things from the future. Some are aware, some are unaware. Maybe they have glimpses or dreams. A lot of artists will describe, oh, I had this dream about this image or this piece of music, and then they'll bring it through. But I think the color part and the design part is very pivotal, because it's all about frequency. So even the different colors in my artwork, I actually overlap pencils to get a certain color. And again, when I started that, I had no idea what I was doing, you know, overlapping a blue pencil on a red pencil on a green pencil, and then I would get this bright blue color, and then I would add white to it, and then I would do this and that. And so this kind of a style came through that was very interesting. But I do think that most artists channel, whether they're aware or unaware of it, but frequency and color is very important, because there are yin energy colors, which actually amplify your energy, so that when you look at them, you see purples, you see like higher neon frequencies of blue and green and yellow and
higher
orange.
Higher neon frequencies.
Yeah. Okay. And then there's yang colors, which are more grounding, which are the browns, the earth tones, black. And so I combine those both in my artwork, and they it's very again, it's very detailed. It gets very detailed. I receive descriptions of each piece as it's coming through, and sometimes the descriptions are endless. And basically, I do have descriptions and details on the back of each image, but sometimes I receive a lot more information about the color schemes and what they do for the human Socratic system and the energy system, and how they connect people with higher dimensional planes and different things like that.
All right. Well, I'm going to let Elena ask you questions in a minute here, but I have two questions for you. One, you know, did this knowing and hearing or finding out that you were an artist on different worlds in different times, has this made you explore, you know, we on this show here, I've done past life regression and I've done future life regression, and people don't even know that you can do future life regression. So have you submitted yourself to anything like that? Have you looked into what your potential past is? That's one. And two, how did this change your spiritual beliefs in terms of reincarnation, you know, lives of the soul, all of that?
Well, to your question number one, absolutely. I was totally fascinated with my past lives, especially when they told me that I'd been an artist on 63 other planets. So,
63?
Again, yeah, 63 other planets. I even have artwork out in the galaxy on space stations near Andromeda.
I love it. I have artwork in the galaxy on space stations.
Can you
spot
some tickets?
I love it. That's on your resume. I hope that's on your resume. Okay, that's
I should put that on my resume.
I'd put that on my resume in a minute.
Hook us up with
tickets. Who's going to tell me no?
So I actually have art in museums on other planets, on Sirius A.
Yes.
I do, and in Alpha Centauri, which is a holographic world, I have artwork as well.
You have art on the holographic world.
Oh, yeah.
I love
that. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Well, like Bach and Beethoven, you know, they're musicians. They actually came from the Pleiades. All of their music was created on those worlds first, in the Pleiadian worlds. And then their music seeded other worlds as well. So like all a lot of artists and a lot of musicians and a lot of architects and broadcasters, communicators, they have their work in other galaxies, in other dimensions as well. And that's happening simultaneously to this lifetime. And so, of course, I was interested in my past lives. I've lived in Atlantis 5 times. There were actually 4 different versions of Atlantis. There were all of the ancient mythical worlds like Camelot and Lemuria here on the planet, which are today just fables to a lot of people, but those were real worlds and realms that existed in the higher dimensions of Earth. And that's why they're considered fables, is because they weren't physical like our world was in a dense physical way like our modern society is, but they existed in the higher world. But I've actually had 273 lives on this planet alone. And then of course I've lived on other planets as well, and when I connect with other people in person, immediately I can tell, you know, I can see their a lot of their past lives. And
that's one of the things that you offer, you know, besides your art what I call art therapy, and leading to enlightenment, you do just personal readings and things like that. Now, how does that work? Is this always that they have to meet you in person? Do you do this on the phone? How does this work?
Well, I guess it just depends. And past life information usually comes in immediately when I see the person, when I actually see them physically. But I can do destiny readings. I do a lot of them over the telephone. Actually, most of them I do over the telephone now. And I do people from, you know, all walks of life with different types of jobs, different cultures, different areas of the planet. And when I'm talking to a person, or even when I can get an email from them and ask them a few questions, then I can start accessing their what they call the Akashic record and begin pulling that information through. I usually get past life information first because that's one of my specialties.
Did you say your Akashic information?
Yeah, your Akashic record. Each person has one. Mm-hmm. Yes.
All right, well, you know, I'm going to ask you to do a destiny, prediction here for me on the show. But you're tuned to Listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI, and we're speaking with the fascinating Brian DeFlores, who experienced something in 1996 that transformed his life and helped him find his purpose, which is to do art that helps us find our own purpose and reprograms us, essentially, sort of like getting an upgrade. And now, Brian, you're willing to take a few calls here?
Yes, sure.
You got to know this is New York, and New York is, you know. But I'm going to let Elena ask you a few questions. The phone number that we're going to take some calls for Brian is 212-209-2900. But Elena, I know you had some questions you were going to ask Brian.
Hi, Brian.
Hello.
Mine are just nuts and bolts. This is all extremely fascinating, of course. But, you know, with all the experiences that you've just, like, explained, but what is the parallel? Can I just like bring it down? Like, what is the parallel with everyday life for you? Like, you wake up and you have your coffee and you can be hit with, you know, first the radio and then the video images. But when you're going out to say, when you encounter certain people or everyone, you can feel certain vibes or certain past life experiences. But when you just want to be by yourself, is that possible anymore?
Yes. Yes. You mean, yes, I
can you go and get a Big Mac and not not be overwhelmed by, like, do I need, what is that person, where is it coming from?
Can you ever be alone, Brian?
Absolutely. And I love my silent time, but I love being with people as well. I go through the drive-thru at McDonald's and get a hash brown and, you know, an ice mocha or whatever. And I drive around. I live in Las Vegas right now, so it's very stimulating to me. I've lived in different places, you know, on the planet, like Sedona, Mount Shasta, Australia, and California. So I like traveling, and I live a normal life, but I think my perception, my perspective of everything, even like one of the first drawings that came through was the energetic structure of a Big Mac. And it's funny you said that, was I actually did an image.
The energetic structure of a Big Mac.
Yeah, yeah. And that's
the theme of the show.
I want to see that diagram, okay?
Well, and that's how far I went. I mean, I look at everything as frequency and energy. So I said, okay, well, I was eating a Big Mac one day, and so I drew a Big Mac energetically, and it's very interesting. It's a beautiful image.
See? And, told you, Mike.
Yeah, and
I'm
it's
sorry
amazing.
To interrupt, Brian.
So, yeah, and so I do have a normal life, but I think my perception of everything is a little bit different. I perceive things differently. Like I can, connect with other life forms, like animals and trees, in different ways. You know, I've been able to communicate with animals and things like that. But I guess I'm just really sensitive.
I want to know what the trees have to say.
The trees. Well, the trees. The trees are one of the oldest life forms of this planet, and like the dolphins and the whales, they have a lot of knowledge, they have a lot of wisdom, and just sensing the trees, that's one thing that happens when people become psychic or awaken their psychic senses, is they start connecting with the older life forms on this planet. And right now, I can perceive the trees outside my home here in Las Vegas. They communicate differently. It's more of a feeling. But when you get close to a tree, you know, like that popular saying, hug a tree, well, you actually receive energy and receive wisdom from the tree system, because they're all connected all over the planet. And so plants and trees and the whole flora kingdom and all the animal kingdoms,
the Amazon rainforest,
have a lot to tell us, have a lot to help us. They're here to help us, and we're here to help them. So my life is not actually that normal, in the sense where I'm connecting with other life forms all the time, and I'm gauging energy. You know, when I look for a car, when I'm going to buy a car, or look at a house, or this or that, I always look at everything energetically. And is this energetically correct for me, or is this, or do I need to look further? So I'm looking at everything in that way,
right,
because of my artwork.
Interesting. Yeah. And how has this whole experience impacted your interpersonal relationships? Has it allowed?
Huge. Well, initially, when I awakened, I lost everyone. I lost nearly all my family members. Went away. And they were shocked because, like I said, my physical structure, my genetic structure actually changed. My physical appearance changed very dramatically. So my family didn't really know what to make of it. And even my friends, well, I had a lot of truck driver friends at that point, and even my friends just kind of melted away. They just kind of faded back a little bit, because it was quite shocking what was happening to me, the things I was saying. And even though I thought I was still a little bit, you know, the same person, I was obviously energetically quite different. And so, of course, you know, a few years later, everyone came back, and, you know, my family loves what I do. They think it's very interesting. They don't understand it all, but they like to, you know, hear me talk about it, and they see that I'm, you know, fairly successful at it. So, you know, in their eyes, that's, you know, good enough for them. And I've connected with other people, you know, on the planet that do this type of work as well. I've connected with shamans who do you know, indigenous type of earth work and healing work, and a lot of interesting people. So I've met so many different interesting people, and my interactions and my relations with people are very different too. They're more in-depth, I would say, whereas my relations with people were very superficial before 1996. I wasn't very emotionally deep or mentally deep before that time. And then after that, I kind of had a different view on my connections with people and relationships and things like that.
Okay. So, not to go into a negative aspect of that, but being that you're obviously so enlightened with and can, like, evolve into different relationships, even with your family, your friends, is there a time, too, when you do experience negativity? And not to be sophomoric, but do you ever have your feelings hurt? Were you just like...
Absolutely. Well, there are different aspects of myself that I guess process different things. And I think that's true for everyone. I'm just really conscious of myself. There are times when I'm very vulnerable, and there are times when I have insecurities. But when I'm doing my artwork, or when I'm talking to people about, you know, the galactic realms or past lives or their destiny, I seem to be very confident. And that's when I have other higher aspects of myself, from either the Ashtar Command or the Federation, they step in. So
the,
I actually
the
have
Federation,
what's called...
Did you say the Federation steps in?
So yes. The force is with you.
A force is with me, absolutely. And you as well. I mean, both of you, you have aspects of yourself that are from the galactic realms as well. You're doing other things up there simultaneously to your life down here. That's what I've actually learned with everyone, is we actually are living simultaneously in other realities and in other dimensions. And with me, there is a fleet of ships that are called the Ashtar Command, and there are other dimensional beings that have never really had an incarnation or physical lives on Earth, although some of them are here now. But they actually are the police of our galaxy, so they kind of keep the bad guys out. But obviously, going back to your question, yes, there. If you look around the world, there's all sorts of things going on that seem very, you know, cause great concern to us. And there's many ecological problems. There are problems with, factions of other cultures. There's, of course, the ISIS problem, the Ebola problem. There's earth changes. And all of this is geared to take humanity into a new direction. It's actually a lot of what the Ashtar Command is calling karmic processing of the planet right now, and it seems very intense. It actually seems like things are getting worse on the planet when actually a direction because of it.
The Ashtar Command. All right, Helen, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Yes. Did you have a question for Brian?
Yeah, sure. I'm just wondering, Ryan, have you ever been able to express pain or suffering in your art? Because, there are, hundreds, thousands of artists who have been able to.
Yes, well, I think that my process is very basic. When I sit down to do an image, all of my personal processing or emotional anything negative that I'm experiencing, any anger or stress, that's displaced and set aside by my process, because I do a meditation before I bring an image through, and I bless all of the materials. I bless the paper, I bless the pencils and the pens and whatever I'm using, and itself, that displaces any type of negativity that I'm experiencing. But certainly I've looked at other artists' work that where there's a lot of emotional pain and a lot of negativity, and that's one purpose of art, is to release any negative emotions inside of you, or any positive emotions, and create a piece that actually shows what's going on the inside. So I think with other artists, and I'm sure I've done a couple of pieces, in the past when I was in high school, I had an art class, and I did a couple of, paintings or whatever with all the other kids, and they didn't look so good, and I'm sure it was some type of emotional processing that I was going through. But currently, with my current work, I actually do the meditation.
So you're saying, let me ask you, so you're saying in high school you were an artist then as well?
Well, I wasn't an artist. I had an art class in high school, you know, gotcha. Like everyone else.
Gotcha.
And so you look around in the art class, and some of the kids' stuff looks really good, and then yours looks really, crappy. So, yeah. So
I took that class.
Yeah, so there's emotional processing that I experience in art. But in my process, I actually displace all my stress and all of that before I begin to do it.
All right. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to ask a question about the trees. You know, do you feel the pain, or do trees express the pain of, having people lynched and hanging from their limbs and things of that nature?
Well, the trees are a collective consciousness, so yes, they feel everything that goes on the planet. And of course, when somebody cuts a tree down, you know, even I feel that, but I can see the evolution in all of it. Now, a lot of the life forms have come to this planet knowing, previous to their incarnation, what is going to happen. And so they're prepared for it in a way. But they're here to raise our consciousness. The trees are very aware of the ages of humanity that we've been here for thousands of years. They're aware of everything. They hold the wisdom. They hold the knowledge of this planet. And so they're aware as they come into incarnation what is going to happen when they're here. Just like a child coming in before their incarnation, they're aware that their parents are going to get divorced when they're 9 years old, and it's going to be fairly traumatic. But on some level, they are desiring that soul experience. But the trees are here, as well as the other life forms, to help us evolve in a certain way that's going to be positive in the end.
But do the trees feel the pain?
Well, yes, they do, of course. Anything in the physical realm here that is cut or hurt in any way feels pain. But that pain with the trees is distributed within the collective consciousness, unlike within our human body when I fall down and skin my knee, or when I'm cut, or I cut myself with a knife. I'll feel it internally, but you won't necessarily feel it.
All right, somebody else is here. Hello, you're on the air.
I'm on the air now?
Yes, you are.
Yes.
Oh, I just joined the conversation. Is this Kanye West on?
No, this is not Kanye West on. This is Brian DeFlores, who has experienced something in 1996.
Although he could be if you want him to.
Exactly.
Yeah,
he experienced something in 1996 that was an awakening, and then after that had actual entities and alien beings come to him and communicate with him and show him his purpose, which is to do art that is transformational for human beings. And that's what we're discussing.
Yeah, okay. No, but you sure it's not Kanye?
I'm pretty sure it's not Kanye. I mean, it could be Kanye's
alter ego. Brian, could you be Kanye for us?
Brian, are you Kanye?
Not in this lifetime.
All right.
There it is. Well, you're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. If you want to ask a question of Brian before he has to leave us, it's 212-209-2900. And this is Night Shift. Hello, you're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to ask Brian a question.
Okay.
All right.
I'm a self-taught artist, and a lot of things you say resonated just on a general basis, but I've always wanted to draw, and then I didn't get the seeing of it until maybe a couple of years ago. We are now making portraits and things like that, but I really have a thing about the anatomy and the body that I'm struggling to connect to that. I have to learn the mechanics of anatomy. Will that come in time and drawn from memory just as an artist to him because he's so prolific?
Yes. Yes, it will. And this may be your calling as well. Each person has a slightly a different destiny and a different way to broadcast different details that are coming through. So in order to swing with the anatomy part of it, in order to strengthen that, you might want to look at, like a children's book about the anatomy of a human body. You may want to study that, you know, even on the internet or in books, and call that to you so you can actually make that gift stronger or make any artistic weakness you have stronger. And I've done this as well by doing research in certain areas and asking as well, asking your guardian angel and your spirit guides to actually help you to bring that gift in stronger or to make that stronger within you.
Okay. Hello, you're in the air.
Yes, hi. I had a question about sex. Not that he has to reveal anything personally, but if there were changes in that or... I actually am looking for
that's a fascinating question. That's a fascinating question, sir.
I'd say. Just
so, Brian,
you know, your evolution or
Brian,
did things change?
Did things change sexually for you?
Well, there are higher forms of what I call sexual alchemy, and that's a great subject to go into. That's a whole subject in itself, and And I've actually taught a class called Pleiadian Sexual Alchemy, which is wildly popular all over. And it goes into the higher dimensional aspects and awareness of sexuality and where the evolution of sex and love are going on this planet. And, I mean, imagine a 17-hour orgasm, if I can say that on the air. Imagine that.
Yes, you can.
Hold on. Let me imagine.
I'm trying.
Yes. I'm with it. Yeah. I'm with you. 17 hours.
And that's where we're going. All of the different...
Is that where we're going?
Well, yes.
Okay,
absolutely.
That's a
fifth-dimensional... again,
well, that's a reason
alchemy.
To stick around.
No wonder you have so many followers. No, I'm kidding.
Absolutely, yeah, it's fantastic. But all of the different combinations of sexual alchemy and sexual expression on this planet are mirrored in from other dimensions and other worlds. This is not the only planet that is experiencing the different types of sexuality. But there are beings incarnating here from other planets in order to diversify the sexual experience on this planet. And, of course, we're moving into a fifth-dimensional experience, which is about a 17-hour to 26-hour orgasm. And that'll be the norm on this
I'm
planet.
I'm with that. And you just pass out.
Absolutely.
You just pass out. I'm with the whole concept. Hello, you're on the air.
You know, that if that's the only reason to stay, then, you
that's
know,
a good
that's
reason
a good
to
reason.
Be there. I mean,
yeah,
you know, I'm with
is.
You. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
Sorry. I was just wondering if one knows their destiny, can it be changed?
Good question.
That's a good question. Yes and no. You have lateral movement within your destiny contract. So your destiny is already set in motion.
Ooh, that's a good title right there. Lateral movement within the destiny
contract. You can change the volume within the different experiences that you're having, whether it's going to be really strong or really weak or this or that in a minor way.
This can tie in with the sex question.
Yes, it does. Go ahead. I'm with you.
Your destiny pattern is already in motion.
I was just disconnected.
Go ahead. I'm listening. Brian, we're listening.
Yes. Okay. Oh, okay. I was finished.
Okay. Well, that's very interesting. Well, the phone number here is 212-209-2900. We're speaking with Brian DeFlores, who has a website called briandeflores.com. He is an artist who is prolific. He's done over 13,000 images. They're images that actually will help you tune into your higher self, help you change and transform your life. And this ability came to him after he had an encounter that transformed his life. So the phones are lighting up here. We're going to take a few more calls. You're with us for a few more minutes here, Brian?
Absolutely.
All right, Brian.
Oh, great.
Brian's enjoying the New York. Hello, you're on the air.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Just wondering, like, if you was in a situation where you made a deal that you was going to make a baby with a female, and then all of a sudden you get to the room and a voice says, what are you doing? You know, your life could change. And then you jump up, you listen to the voice, you run to the door, but you only make it 12 inches from the knob, and then you can't handle the knob. You can't reach the knob. And then you go back and you make the baby. I mean...
You can't reach the knob. This sounds like a dream, sir. But go ahead, Brian. I want to hear your response to this one.
Well, I think that in one aspect, one perspective is that there are souls that want to incarnate onto this planet, and in your soul contract, you've made an agreement on some level to help this soul to come in, this child soul to come in to the planet. So there may be. Of course, you have free will here, so you can make whatever decisions you like. But if you have like if you're like second guessing things in a positive way, or you feel a strong pull towards a certain thing or a strong pull back, that means it's probably in your soul contract to actually help to bring the soul through. So that might have been what that was.
That's exactly what it was, because twins came out the deal. A boy and a girl, and it was a one-shot deal, and I read it the way you're reading it, you know what I mean? And now I got to live through it, because the mother turned out to be a snake, but the babies are here.
The mother was a snake, but the baby's a hero.
No, that is a movie.
She is a snake.
I feel you, my brother.
Yeah, so this was interesting to hear him just validate what I was thinking, and he don't know me and I don't know him. What I know is a scary situation that I'm in right now.
Yeah, well, you know, John, what any advice for how he should proceed and a perspective he could have to make it through?
It's about commitment and responsibility, and some of the responsibilities that a soul takes on here, they feel, some people feel, oh, I'm not ready for this. I can't handle this, because some of the experience very, very intensified. And so just learning to connect with your spirit and with your guardian angels, and knowing that the children that came through are they need a certain amount of love. They need to be cared for. You're basically one of their guardians, and realizing that it's all in a perfect soul pattern together, it will eventually turn out really well for you. And I'm sure it is right now. It may be just your perspective or your perception of not being able to handle what has come in, because again, there are a lot of intense experiences down here. Even, you know, caring for a child, caring for children, that can be very intense for a soul, because they feel, some souls feel locked down, while other souls feel, oh, this is meant to be, I'm supposed to be doing this.
Well, sounds like he's having more issues with the snake mom than the kids.
Yeah, that's probably.
And hello, you're on the air. We'll take our last question here. Hello.
Yeah, oh, his name is Brian, right?
Yes, his name is Brian.
Yes, sir.
Maybe I misunderstood, but he said he had sex with the fifth dimension?
No, he didn't say he had sex with the fifth dimension.
But I did not say that I did.
Okay. I'm with that, Brian. I'm with
No taking away.
All right, we'll take one more call. 212-209-2900. We're talking with Brian DeFlores, who is a transformational artist who had a transformational experience that allows him to create art that will help you transform. Hello, you're on the air. Hello.
Yeah, hi.
Yes.
May I ask a question?
Yes, you may.
Yes, you may.
Yes. When we look at Brian's drawings, then can we set an intention so we can have better outcomes? Can we learn how to be the director of our lives more? Because life is making decisions on how we want to feel.
Yes, absolutely. That's the function of the artwork, is to help to evolve your consciousness and your soul more quickly. So literally, if you go to my website, briandeflores.com, and you look in the galleries, there are the accelerator galleries, any image that you choose actually helps in a different way. But universally, they all work together to make people more clear mentally and emotionally, and to help to bring in other perspectives and other options and other ideas that people aren't aware of. So they actually make you help to make you more conscious. They trigger that within your energy field, especially when you have one of them by your bed at night. You'll actually feel the difference in your dream state. There'll be lots of things happening in your dream state. You may wake up in the morning and have clarity on an issue that you were confused about the day before. So, yes, they do work in that way.
Wow, thank you. And will it help break away from patterns? Like if we have a pattern of you know, being either the victim or the rescuer or the perpetrator?
Yes. And these patterns may go back just in this lifetime, or they may be very strong embedded patterns that have followed you through many lifetimes. That's what I find out with a lot of people who have like a very intense phobia or a fear about something that didn't emanate from this lifetime, although they might perceive that it came from a former lifetime, and it's been gathering steam through all of their incarnations. So it's very strong in this lifetime. So the images actually help to break down that pattern that that energy structure and to clear that fear or that phobia.
So I have one more question. One time I went into a fetal position, I went into the void, and it scared me. I was like out there in the universe, and I felt the oneness of mind, and it scared me. Like, is there a lot more to life in other realms than this one-mindedness?
Oh, yes, yes. Life is very different in the outer universe, and it's very expanded. There are actually, we live in one of the universes, but there's actually 12 different universes. And that's a topic for another conversation, but there, the other worlds and the other planets are much more expanded for the most part than Earth is. Earth has been in a process for a long time where it's evolving, but Earth is in a playing what they call a polarity integration game, where there's actually negatives and positives pushing and pulling constantly. So it's difficult and more challenging to evolve here, but you actually get more points as a soul for coming here than you do to another world where it's a lot easier.
That's interesting. Elena, did you have a last question for Brian?
One question. Regret. Since 1996, going through all these like intense transitions, do you still experience... from someone who's like obviously one dimensional in comparison to you.
Are you one dimensional, Elena?
I would say so.
Okay.
But anyway, to go on with the question. So, Brian, do you wake up on some of those mornings that you give them testimony to? Do you like, do you still experience that? Which is one of the things
regret.
Here on.
Do you still experience regret, Brian?
Well, I've chosen to take a path that is very different from what most people live on this planet, although there are millions of people that are on a path such as myself around the world. And yes, sometimes I'm working inside my home and I have these different perceptions and perspectives, and I look outside or I see people doing all sorts of things outside. And I've chosen that. I've had friends, they call me and they want to do this, or they want me to go on, travel with them here. And even though I would love to do that, if I'm doing something, regarding my work, I'll choose this. And I guess that those are minor regrets, is that I've chosen a certain path. And I've chosen to take it to 100%, to its fullness, and expand it. And there are experiences, yes, possibly, that my life has lacked over the years, but I've, again, chosen this other path. So for me, I think I don't necessarily look at it as regrets, but maybe things that I'll do someday that, I just wasn't able to do because of, the work that I'm doing.
Wow.
If that answers your question.
That's very good, Brian. Now, and your website is briandeflores.com. And how often do you do these classes, these transformational processes?
Oh, just all the time. It's endless. There are endless amount of images coming in from other dimensions, from other planets. I can actually see them stacked up on the etheric level. There's also now, again, I began as an artist 18 years ago, but that's evolved to giving classes on psychic awareness, on meditating, on, expanding your creativity and financial abundance. Of course, the Pleiadian sexual alchemy class, which I'll be doing in February. Ooh. And you can access those, through teleconferencing. They're very powerful. You'll feel the energy. We actually bring in the Pleiadians and the Ashtar Command. I help people by taking them up into, the spacecraft, astrally and etherically, so they can get attuned to that frequency. I guess whatever people are interested in, there's a diverse range of images. There's also the medical miracle images, which is a whole page on my website that help people to get rid of cancer and blood disorders and even HIV, things like that. they energetically break down that disease and just dissolve it inside of you, whether you're dealing with depression or menopause, the intensities of menopause or fertility issues. They actually help to clear all those issues within the human body. So there's a diverse range of classes and images that do different things. So it speaks kind of a lot of different aspects or areas of life.
All right. So I have to ask you before you go, you and I have never met. Can you do any kind of destiny reading or impression or images that you get from having dealt with me here on the show?
Don't fall into that trap, Brian.
Well, is there anything specific that you're interested in expanding upon in your life?
Sure. I have projects that I'm working on. I'd like to know if they will come to the fruition I want.
I would just say stay focused.
So he wants a happy meal.
Well, it seems that you have a lot of different talents and a lot of different interests. And, of course, one of your primary roles on this planet right now is a communicator. You're in the communications realm where you're actually broadcasting energy and you're helping people by bringing people like me and other people on the show that disseminate new information to the planet, and definitely keep doing that. That's one of the higher options. You could go any way you wanted to go. There seems like there's different aspects of your destiny. The different projects that you're doing seems like some of them are okay. Some of them have more energy than others do. Do you have a creative format or a creative outlet that you use? Personally, you know, like writing or drawing or whatever, do you do anything like that?
Sure.
All of the above.
Okay. Yeah, it just seems like you need to focus in one area because people tend to get too many different areas of interest going, and focusing our energy in like two or three different areas is actually good. When you get to four or five different interests, then it starts to fragment your destiny pattern. But I would say to expand your communications level with people, you would want to look in that realm, because that seems to be a really big area if you would choose to go down that route. Again, there's seems to be about four or five different areas around you, but two of them have a little bit less energy. And again, my psychic abilities work differently than, say, a regular psychic, where they could say, oh, you have two pennies and $4 in your pocket right now. My psychic senses work better when I'm actually having a conversation with a person about, okay, is there anything you'd like to expand upon? What area of your life do you need help in at this point?
Okay.
So is there any other questions you have, or areas, questions in areas that you want to expand upon?
No, not now, but I want to know if you'd be willing to come back at some time.
Absolutely, yeah, it's really fun. Yeah.
All right, well, we thoroughly enjoyed having you here, Brian. And
we
you
totally
are
did.
You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, 99.5 FM. This is Night Shift. Brian,
thank you,
can
Brian.
Be reached at briandeflores.com. You can learn all about everything he's got to offer. So, Brian, thank you. It's been a fascinating, fascinating conversation. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yes, I did. Thank you, and
thank
thanks
you,
to everyone.
Brian.
Yes.
Okay. So
all right.
Stay tuned.
Right now. This is Backbone Music, and I'm JJC. This track right here is called Killing Shelly. You get it very soon. All right, catch up. Come on.
England, what's up? Jamaica, what, what? Nigeria, Killing Shelly.
All right, you're tuned to Listener Sponsored Radio, WBAI, and we're going to go now to an interview with James Marsh, who's the director of a film that's in theaters right now called The Theory of Everything. He's a really fascinating director, a really interesting film. You should listen. You should go see the movie. I have to say, Eddie Redmayne, you know, when you watch the movie, you feel you're watching. It's uncanny, the performance he gives playing the physicist. And, Elena, you had a question you were going to ask me? You were going to say something? Somebody else was calling here. Hello, you're in the air. We're about to go to the interview. All right, well, they're gone. What were you going to say, Elena?
No, I was just saying how remarkable I thought that interview went with Brian.
You enjoyed that.
I did. Yeah. I have utmost more questions, but I think he answered quite a few.
Yes, he did. All right. Stay tuned for an interview with James Marsh.
Can they post to our website if they have additional questions?
Sure.
They can forward them on?
We'll forward them on to... but you just go to Brian DeFlores. You don't have to go to our website. That's right. But you can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI, and here with James Marsh, who's the director of The Theory of Everything. James, welcome to WBAI.
Pleasure to be here.
So, I have a few questions for you. First of all, as I mentioned to you, I'm a big fan, and there's different films you've made that I love for different reasons. But I want to know, when did you first know you wanted to be a storyteller?
What an interesting question. When I grew up, we didn't have a television when I grew up as a child. And also, I wasn't allowed to go and see films. That wasn't allowed in my household. So the power of cinema, when I finally got to engage with it, was, for me, an overwhelming thing. And so the impact of cinema when I was young was so powerful. The emotions I felt were so strong. I thought, what an amazing medium that you can have this impact on someone by telling a story. So that was sort of the first... It was a recognition of the power of the medium, that I wanted to be a part of that medium and have that power myself, I guess.
Okay, then I have a couple more contextual questions like that. Why do you think we as human beings need to tell stories?
Well, we tell each other stories all the time. We just do. You know, I'll go home today and tell my kids what I did today. It'll be like a story. Stories tend to have, you know, stories that are valuable, but that have a kind of meaning beyond that kind of story, are ones that I guess involve conflict, involve choices and decisions that we all face in different ways in our lives all the time. And a story can dramatize and distill those things that happen in our lives generally into, you know, a much shorter time frame. And they're built from choices and decisions that characters make. Then we are able to invest, I guess, in those choices and decisions and extract often something valuable from them, good or bad. So they're in our nature. Mm-hmm. Just embedded, every culture has storytelling as a part of its culture, literally.
Yes, it does.
And what's amazing is when you have kids, if you have kids, and how immediately they latch onto stories. That's the first thing you do, is read them stories. And they want to hear the same story over and over again when they're younger. They can't believe it's a story, it seems, and therefore they're surprised every time they hear the same story. Kids will often read the same book for like 3 months. You read the same story over and over again. And so you discover the joy of narrative, I guess, at a very, very early age. It's almost like language. It's in our DNA, in our brain wiring, to want and need stories.
I agree with you 100%. And my last question like that is, what, in your estimation, makes a good story and a story worth telling?
Well, that's a very interesting question. I can only answer it based on my own sort of storytelling choices.
Sure.
And as a documentary filmmaker, I tended to respond to stories that seem totally unbelievable. And because they're true and real, you can't negotiate with that. And so I made a film called Man on Wire about a French artist who strings a tightrope in the Twin Towers and walks on it for almost an hour at the top of the Twin Towers when they were still there. And if someone said that happened, you wouldn't believe it. But it happened, and therefore I have to reckon with that as a documentary filmmaker. In dramatic films, I've just made one, as you know, Through of Everything Now, which is a vaguely a true story, but it's definitely a true story, but it's dramatized, and it felt to me that in this true story that you could explore the emotional life of this relationship between Stephen Hawking and his wife, which is what the focus of the film actually is, better in a dramatic form than you could in a documentary. In a documentary, I think people couldn't remember emotional details the way that a screenwriter can write them. And also, you'd have to be there and observe that relationship, you know, as it happened, for it to be a truthful documentary, as opposed to a retrospective, reconstructed idea of this marriage. So in this particular story, that's a very good way of exploring a true story, is through the dramatic writing of Anthony McCartan. And the stories you're drawn to, I think, are ones that move you, that obsess you, and you know you're going to spend 2 years thinking about, and they have to support, you think, 2 years of obsessive thinking. So that's what I respond to and why I do the work I do.
Well, you actually kind of said something I was going to ask you, because it seems to me that most of your stories that you've done, documentaries or otherwise, deal with people doing what most people would think would be impossible.
True enough. And here's another example, too. Our story in this case is the story, it's a portrait of a marriage in very unusual circumstances. Jane Hawking falls in love with an able-bodied student and marries someone who then marries someone who's condemned, she thinks, to live just for 2 years. And that's a choice she makes, which again is an extraordinary choice, and that creates its own story itself. And of course, Stephen doesn't die. They live, and they have a very complicated marriage that gets increasingly under pressure, and third parties become part of that marriage too. It all becomes very complicated. So that is essentially the emotions of that are what our story generates, if you like.
Well, now I'm curious. Now, you as a documentary filmmaker, you bring to me some of the techniques of documentary filmmaking to a narrative film. What would you say you learned as a storyteller that you've been able to bring to doing narrative films that you probably may not have approached in the same way if you weren't a documentary filmmaker?
Well, definitely, I tended to make dramatic films that have some inspiration in real life, mm-hmm. either loosely or, in this case, quite specifically. And I think you become very concerned about details in your... As you make a dramatic film, that leaders feel right to you, they feel authentic to the situation that you're in. And we were able to study archive film and photographs, the existence of Stephen Hawking and his wife, that we were able to make our sets exactly like the photographs that we'd seen. So that's something that helps you as a dramatic filmmaker, just to feel that things are right. Also, in documentaries, you're dealing with human behavior often that you've observed in a certain kind of way, and that helps you understand the truthfulness of actors, that you're looking for behavior that feels truthful from the actors. And by God, I got it in this particular film. The acting, I think, is extraordinarily good from both Eddie Redmayne and Felicity Jones, who do the best work I've ever seen them do in this film. So you look for that truth too. And I think, you know, what the difference in the two media are really that the means of production is very different. A feature film is much bigger scale, and it happens in a much more compressed time frame. But actually, the objective is very similar, to tell the story as well as you can and as visually as you can. And that's true to both documentaries and to feature films.
Well, again, that makes complete sense to me. Now, maybe a two-part question here. How involved were Hawking and his former wife in the production of this? And what was it that you felt was the most important to bring out in this story?
Well, the film is inspired by Jane's memoir, her account of meeting Stephen and living with Stephen, marrying Stephen. So that's her point of view. So that's already a big part of the story and a big flavor in the story. Anthony McCartan spent quite a few years talking to Jane about the idea of a film and getting her comfortable with that idea. It took a long time, and writing the screenplay. I then met with Jane when I got involved in the film, and she was very helpful. She took me on a very interesting sort of tour of Cambridge, the world that she and Stephen lived in Cambridge, England. And she would point out all the kind of buildings that had no wheelchair access in the 60s when she was first with Stephen, and all the impediments you'd encounter if you had a wheelchair in Cambridge, all the difficult steps and stones and pavings and things you'd meet. He took me to the house where they were first, well, when they were married, they first lived in, which we reproduced in exactly the same, and took me to a room, a bedroom, where Stephen had a moment you see in the film where he discovers an idea. He's tangled up in his pajamas, he can't escape from them because he's unable to move his hands and arms properly, and he has an amazing idea for his work in that situation. And I saw that room, that bedroom, and that sort of informs your in your just how you can do something. So Jane had that involvement with the film. Stephen was much less involved going into the film. We showed him a screenplay as an act of courtesy, and he didn't object to the screenplay. That was about as much as he'd been offered at that point.
That's pretty strong, though.
Yes. And so he gave us his sort of, I guess, understated sort of approval for this, but not enthusiastic approval. We then invited him to come to the set, and there's a very extravagant scene in the film on a May ball, which is a kind of summer party at a Cambridge college. And that was on a certain kind of scale in the film. And I think he was impressed with the fact it wasn't just a miserable little TV show. We're doing something quite big here. And then when the film was almost finished, we had to invite him to come and see the film, which is probably the most nerve-wracking 2 hours of my life.
Sure.
I wasn't able to be in the room. I couldn't. I had to basically leave. We got him into the screening room. I came back to find out what he made of it. And his first observation was he felt broadly true to him. And that's about as good as it gets from a film biography of a person who's living, broadly true. He then later emailed us to tell us that at certain points he thought he was watching himself on screen. Eddie's performance was so convincing that he kind of bought into it as being him. And then as a result of that screening, he offered us the use of his actual voice, his electronic voice he's known for, the signature machine voice that we all know. At that point, we're using our own version of that. We've made our own sort of electronic version of that voice. And he gave us that voice, and that felt like a sign of approval, that he was happy for this film to have been made. And that voice changed the film. It was in a very mysterious way. It just became better with his actual voice. And towards the end of the film, we have his electronic voice playing. So so I think both Jane and Stephen have seen the film and are comfortable with it.
Well, that's got to be very gratifying.
It's a relief, to be honest with you. They didn't like it. You'd feel very, very uncomfortable about that if you'd made a film that without living people and they'd objected to it in some violent way. I'd feel very bad about that.
Well, I want to touch upon something you mentioned earlier. You talked about the emotional impact of movies and how it affected you, and you've done that to me several times. My favorite film of yours is Shadow Dancer. I thought that was
How nice is it? It's not a film that wasn't a widely seen film it was certainly a film that it was very rewarding to make that film. I learned a lot doing it, and I worked with some great actors on that film too. That's a film that involves a lot of uncomfortable feelings of anxiety and dread and betrayals within a family in a very uncomfortable way. It's betraying your own family is probably the worst thing you can do, and yet this woman in the film has a reason to do that. So coming from that film to this was, even this film is about an awful illness that blights people's lives and affects people who care for people who suffer from ALS. And oddly enough, this was a much more optimistic film than that film. The emotional palette was more agreeable and forgiving, because each character in this story has good intentions, even if they hurt each other and even if things don't end up being a happy ever after kind of story. Everyone is coming with a good motive here, and that was kind of refreshing after doing such a dark film beforehand.
It's interesting because you took some of the words again out of my mouth. Some of the feelings I had watching the film was just that uncomfortability of it. It's hard to watch in many ways, I felt, because you care about these characters and what they're going through, you empathize, and it's not a fun feeling. I'm curious, the balance between telling the story and illustrating what he had to go through, so you don't go too far. How difficult was that?
Well, that's a very interesting way of putting it. It felt like a balancing act, too, that you wanted to keep the focus on the relationship and the ebb and flow of this relationship under these circumstances. But that relationship is changing because of the illness and because of Stephen's career and because he's becoming more
and his longevity, too.
And his longevity, which wasn't part of the original understanding of either character going into this marriage, and in our story, or indeed probably in real life, Stephen expects to die within 2 years. Jane expects to marry someone that she loves and watch that person fade away very quickly. That's one thing, and that's terrible. What they get is something beyond that. You know, they, Stephen is alive to this day. That's we have a happy ending, if you like, in our film because he's alive. But you know, the complications of the relationship under this progressive illness, and I think the complications of Stephen's success too. For every success Stephen has, Jane has a burden. That to go to travel is very hard. You know, to go to America to go and collect an award, or for Stephen to give a lecture somewhere. It's Jane with her three children and her burdens that has to take the brunt of this, and this puts stresses on the marriage clearly. And when a third party comes into that marriage, in both real life and the story, that third party comes to help the couple. He's not coming to prey upon them. He's not coming to wreck their marriage. He's coming to help them. And my solution, if you like, to how this could be understood and have sympathy for each character in that in this strange triangle was for Stephen to fall in love with that character first, for Stephen to accept Jonathan's help and assistance and cherish him for that. And the connection between those two characters in the film is very warm. And Stephen eventually gives his permission for this triangle to exist, for each of them to get some support out. It's a very unusual love story in that respect, to have a love triangle where permission is sort of being given, and but people are still being hurt, no question, in that triangle.
And through no necessarily fault of their own.
Absolutely, no malice.
No malice, exactly.
No intentional malice.
No intentional malice.
Quite the opposite, in fact.
Yes. You know, let me also ask you this now, and this is maybe somewhat more personal. For you, I kind of believe that as you define your art defines you. What did you learn about yourself in the making of a film like this?
That's what an interesting question. I mean, there are two obvious things that are given in the territory you're in. One is the nature of Stephen's illness and the impact that has on people who care for those. And I met those people. Eddie met many, many people that way. And, you know, in a film, you can get a film production, you can feel like you have all these worries and you're constant anxiety with this problem, that problem, and you can get very lost in your own problems. And we kept saying to ourselves, so often as we were shooting, well, I can get out of bed in the morning and walk to the bathroom and I can walk here. And there's so many people we've now met who cannot do that, who are losing their lives every day. And I remember saying to Eddie one day, well, that guy we met, well, guess what? He's going to be worse off now. That was a month ago that you met him. And now he's, so this was not to kind of create some false humility here, but it was definitely something that I was very aware of and began to see the world through a disabled person's eyes and how patronizing people are, disabled people. It's not their minds that have gone, it's their bodies in this illness. So to patronize someone intellectually because they're in a wheelchair is the worst thing you can do. And that was an interesting sort of corrective to your understanding of disability. The other part of it, of course, is the whole where do we come from, what does the universe mean side of thing, the big ineffable questions of life. Will we ever understand this, which this question Stephen is asking? So you can't help but begin to ask those questions yourself and end up, you know, at certain points you're in lonely hotel rooms thinking about the nature of the universe and where it started and what your position is in it and how insignificant you are in the scheme of things. And then you just say, well, I'm going to open a beer here and watch television.
Right.
That's all I can do. I can need to live in the moment now. So that's a takeaway, perhaps, is, you know, as Stephen does, living in the moment, something we always remind ourselves to do, but we forget so often. Enjoy every day. Carpe diem. It's really true.
Sure. Now, I also have to ask, you know, as you were working on the finishing of this film, the ALS challenge just became
huge. Yes, it did, actually. They had a company. The Post-Bloc became very aware of it. Eddie's done one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm due for one, I'm sure, soon enough. And that's something that, you know, was just a coincidence that we're making a film about probably the most famous person with this spectrum of illness, which is a spectrum. It's not one particular. Every symptom is the same. It's, you know, it's a wide spectrum of symptoms that people have. And so if in a small way our film can help that awareness, then that's good for us, you know, and good for the world, rather.
Sure. Well, then that must make you believe a little bit in fate, then.
Indeed. Well, it's an interesting coincidence and one that, you know, I'm sort of pleased with, because it's all raising awareness of what is a really devastating illness for people who lose their lives that way. And again, the people who have to endure and care for, you're seeing someone they love, you know, fade and die the way that they do. It's a really terrible, terrible illness.
Well, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
See, they're giving me a signal. I very much
appreciate it. Very nice. Great radio voice.
Thank you.
Going on to all the girls in round town, cause I'm black, white, yellow, or brown. This is Top Cat at the microphone, and I look to take a new thing on. Anywhere we go, hot girl, get around. Them a ring up the other, blow up the cell phone. Low and Angela, and a cat like Simona. I request a long tone. This one of the killer, this one of the ladies, killer. Hard and stiff away, we give her. This one of the killer, this one of the ladies, killer. We are right, like a jockey for the winner. Got we a girl, it's long time, so stop play your 18. Five girl a day, me deserve my rating. Girl, let me tell me, so me fascinating. So me cool and calm and calculating. It's a new thing of when me gonna ice skating. Never been touched, as she clearly stating. For the right man, that is why she waiting. Great time, fertility taking.
It's one of the killer. It's one of the ladies killer. Hard and stiff away me give up. It's one of the killer. It's one of the ladies killer. We are ride like a jockey pan a winner. Every culture, every class, every style and stature. Lead a mafia, cultivate them nature. Cause every woman is another adventure. This one a the killer, this one a the ladies killer. Hard and stiff when we give up. This one a the killer, this one a the ladies killer. We are rise like a jockey for a winner. This one a the killer, this one a the ladies killer. Hard and stiff when we give up. This one a the killer, this one a the ladies killer. We are rise like a jockey for a winner. One of the killer, it's one of the ladies killer. Hard as if I were making up, it's one of the killer, it's one of the killer.
So you're open to all things, as it seems. The phone number here is 212-209-2900. And this is Night Shift. We've been talking about aliens, UFOs, art therapy, the transformative powers of art, the connection to the higher self through your art. And we've got more Life is Like Science Fiction. Lena, you have a couple stories?
I do.
Let's hear the headline.
Is this perfume bottle's sexy toy the world's most discreet?
Is this perfume bottle what?
Sex toy. The world's most
perfume bottle discreet. Sex toy. All right, talk to me.
Women who unwrap a Paco Rabanne fragrance in their Christmas gifts might find its packaging more than meets the eye. Point. Non-phallic. The Bijou Diamond sex toy. A saucy British company has unveiled the world's most discreet sex toy, which looks like a posh perfume bottle. The Bijou Diamond is designed to offer an alternative to women who are bored of phallic-shaped objects.
I'm bored of these phallic-shaped objects.
But for £49.99, device is easily mistaken for Paco Rabanne's Lady Million Eau de Perfume, which costs around the same. The rechargeable BO Diamond is available at Love Honey.
BO Diamond? What's a BO Diamond?
Bijou.
Okay.
Is available on a website based in Bath, Somerset. A spokesman said, a lot of women are going to be finding the Bijou Diamond amongst their presents this year. It is 2014's most have erotic present.
Most have erotic present.
It is gorgeous looking and discreet luxurious toy, which provides a whole new sexual experience for fans of Vibes.
The did you say Vibes?
I did say Vibes, Michael.
Okay, Vibes.
The feisty firm raves about its stimulating contours and 10...
Fans of Vibes.
And 10-function rechargeable motor. So women...
Stop. And this comes with perfume?
Comes in
package
a
like perfume.
Package like for perfume.
Okay.
Therefore, you can go through customs. You can go through anywhere.
Got you, and not be embarrassed.
Not even by your significant other.
Wow.
If your partner is not quite in the mood for that evening.
Right.
The feisty firm raves about.
It's like I'm going to go freshen my powder my nose. Go ahead.
And then she's gone for a bit of time. One customer said it was one of the longest and most satisfying orgasms I've ever had.
Really? Was it like 17 hours?
17 though? Hours or plus.
Wow, nice.
Although they're not bragging about that, but according to Brian, it could be possible.
Well, Brian says that through, you know, alien intervention. So, all right, I'm with that. That's very interesting, Elaine. That's
and the great thing about it is, and I have to agree with this, is your mother could pick it up and have absolutely no idea that it was a sex toy.
Your mother could pick
so
it up.
If
and
you
have
could
no
skip
idea.
By your mom.
And what if your mom just picked it up and wanted to like spray a little on her wrist? Would she just would it change mom's perspective?
It might vibrate a little, but then she would just think it was out. Out of contents.
Out? Oh, like it's just out of
it's
okay.
Just empty.
It's just vibrating and it's just empty. You feel that's what your mom would think?
Well, you would hope so.
All right, I'm with that. Okay. I'll buy that for a dollar, Elena. Okay. So, and what do they call this product exactly? They call it the what?
The Bijou Diamond.
The Bijou...
Bijou. I don't think you're going to be able to pronunciate like after
Bijou,
using this.
Bijou, like Beaujolais, Bijou.
Bijou.
The Bijou,
Bijou Diamond.
Okay. All right. I'm with that. Okay. All right. You have another story?
Sure.
Something for women?
Something for women.
Oh, I don't know. You tell me. What do you got?
Well, we could do the man finds certain things. But let's go on to this one.
Okay.
Cannabis sex aid has got California ladies going potty for the latest Hollywood fad.
Women. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cannabis sex aid. Talk to me.
Imagine how excited the female population here are known to that they now have their own version of Viagra.
Okay.
Now, this is written by the author, so she's...
Clearly, you know, she did some research. Go ahead.
Yeah, she's basically, just to preempt this, she's like saying that now we can talk about this rather than the Kardashians. Anyway, back into the product. Fiora Oil is the largest U.S. sex craze. There are some bizarre fads, quote-unquote, in Hollywood. Most of them are diets or cosmetic surgery. So imagine how excited the female population here are to know that they have their own version of Viagra.
You read that already. Go ahead.
No, I haven't.
Okay. Then repeat itself. Go ahead.
We can all stop talking about butt implants or the paleo diet for a few days. Yay, phew. From the author of this article. And what they love even more is that it is strictly only available for Californians. For now, anyway. Because it's illegal everywhere else. Always like shutting out the woman. It can only be bought by people with a certificate to buy weed here, and a bit hard to get. The doctors don't really care.
Okay, what is it exactly? What is it?
Introducing, it's a marijuana-based oil.
Marijuana?
Marijuana-based oil that is used during sex.
A marijuana-based oil that's used during sex. Okay, I'm with you.
On its own Instagram page, it is classically described as all-natural sensual enhancement oil.
So it's absorbed through the skin.
Yes, thoughtfully designed only for women. Apparently, the ingredients relax us women, increasing that wow. That's an interesting word. Wow thing.
So it relaxes women. What does it do for the men? When the men come in contact, are they relaxed too?
I think the point of this is that the men don't have to go as long and pretend. Because they probably already had their wow.
No, you're extrapolating. Go ahead, finish the story. I don't believe it.
It may be nonsense, but the fact such a fuss is being made means there could be something to it.
Mm.
According to this author. Indeed, the rest of the world want it and are actively trying to get their hands on Fiora. The magazines are writing about it. Rich middle-aged women are raving about it. Men are obviously, and you two men, Lance and Mike, are obviously delighted with it.
I'm delighted. That's how delightful. So, Lynn, if I get a hold of some of this, like, we can experiment.
So you might actually be able to just buy your woman a Big Mac and then get it off and you'll be done.
I want to hear about the liquid. Keep going, Lena, please. I want to know about the liquid. What's this liquid? How do they sell it?
It only...
You get like a spray bottle?
No, you...
What is it?
From what I can say, it's... You smoke it like marijuana.
No, it's an oil. Keep reading.
It's an oil. No, that's
what
they...
You're extrapolating without reading the article. Go ahead. Finish reading.
And I'm pretty delighted too, says the author. And only because we can now stop talking writing about how we can look better. Finally, blah, 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 blah. She doesn't say how you can, like...
She doesn't tell you?
No.
Well, some research. Lance, find out more about this. We need to know. We need to go. Let's go to the site. I want to go to the site. This woman's article is like, oh, it's great. It's out. Isn't that great? It's out. It's out.
This well, I tried
out.
To warn
it's
you.
It's out now. Isn't that great? Great. It's out.
Her motivation was that she shouldn't have to write about the Kardashians or anyone else.
But she's not really writing it about it. She's just like, yeah, it's out. That's like, let me fill out the word count. Take a phone call, Alina?
Absolutely.
212-209-2900. You can take a call now. You can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFTZ at AOL.com. I do want to mention a movie that's coming out this Friday that I definitely suggest that you go see. It's a film. It's a Finnish film. It's called Theo and Vincent. It's about it's called Theo's House, and it's about Theo and Vincent, two Finnish architects who are involved in a big change of environmental identities in an area where they replaced 320 wooden houses with 32 concrete towers. And it's a really fascinating look on how we as human beings can impact our own landscape and, you know, what you can do with technology and creativity. So it opens up this week at the Quad on this Friday. So I suggest you take a look for it. Theo's House. Now, Elena.
Yes.
What's the phone number here?
212-209-2900.
Okay. And you have one more story, don't you?
Men need nights out with the lads, scientists say. Researchers in Germany found it was good for a man's health to be allowed time to bond with fellow males.
Like in the Flintstones with the Buffalo Lodge?
Exactly. It is the news. No longer suffering wife wanted to hear. Scientists have proved that every man needs a good night out with his friends.
Yes, I'm with that. Go ahead.
Okay, according to the research, male bonding is more likely to lower a man's stress levels than a night out with his partner. Or
so it's like back in the day when we'd all go hunting.
Okay,
I'm with that.
Or time spent with his family. The study, bound to be wheeled out as an excuse by men across the country, found males...
You paused. Found males.
Found males, that's all I have.
That's not all you have. Elena.
Suffer less anxiety when out in a group.
Elena.
This is how much I pay attention to my
clearly,
man. No wonder he wants to go out.
Finish.
Well, if I had that Viagra, I would be able to. So, scientists from Germany's University of Göttingen studied groups of Barbary Maccabees, a type of...
What? Vibrating Maccabees?
Macaw. Yeah, a type of ape which exhibits remarkably human-like social macaw.
Did you say vibrating or migrating?
Migrating.
Oh.
Human-like social, or it kind of, actually could be interchangeable.
To you, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Levels of male stress hormones soared when male Maccabees were their partner or other female family members. But when they were in a group of other males, they were much more relaxed. Much more.
Men are like, oh, whew, get away from the women.
The researchers even discovered... The researchers even discovered stress-related illnesses only seem to occur among females or couples.
Females? Only the females got the stress-related diseases? Now, did they get it because
dealing
with the males?
Or no. These illnesses, according to you guys, only occurs among us females. Or
is
couples.
Is this what the article says?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Males also look after each other. The study for the journal PNAS noted.
They're like, I got your back, bro. The I got your back, bro syndrome among the Maccabees. Go ahead.
While men may do this by watching each other's backs.
Is that what
very
it says?
Good.
Is that what it says?
Yes, it See, does. You see. Quote unquote without even having read it.
I understand all things.
For monkeys, this means picking insects and fleas out of each other's fur.
I'm not doing that for my buddy. I'm sorry. I won't be picking Lance. Won't be picking any fleas off you, just so you know. Not going to happen. Okay.
Well, maybe if y'all knew each other better.
Nope. And I won't ask him to do it for me either.
Christopher Young of the university's Primate Social Evolution Group said, if male primates live in multi-male groups, they usually fight fiercely over...
Multi-male groups.
Sounds like a band. They usually fight fiercely over access to females, but males can develop friendly relationships with a few group of mates.
The wingmen.
Male Maccabees form social bonds similar to
fight
human...
for access to females. That's sort of...
Except among your closest pals.
Yeah.
Which is interesting.
And that's when the bros before hoes clause comes in.
Well, can I ask you... not to divert from the, actually to go along with the story, but
I'm not a Maccabee. I'm not a Maccabee.
With your closest mates, would you refrain from contact with a woman if you thought your closest mate, for example, say Lance, Michael?
If Lance is going after the same woman I'm going after?
Yeah, would you refrain if it... I know you won't pick the fleas off his back, but would you refrain if Lance was really digging this woman?
It depends.
And he was your closest.
It depends.
Mate.
Did he call dibs? That's the question. Did he call dibs?
And one thing that this article doesn't go into is what constitutes the closest mate versus a secondary mate.
Oh, come on. The one that you hang with. The one you go down to the river with. The one that you crack coconuts with. That's your mate. Who do you crack coconuts with, Elena?
But think about it. No, but this article does delve into, like, there are mates that you hang out with at the local corner pub or the local corner restaurant or coffee shop.
Or the local palm tree.
Right, but would you sell them short? Sure you would.
Would I sell them short? Sure I would. Is that a question or a statement?
That's my question. What's the difference?
What do you mean sell them short?
The difference.
What are you talking about?
Would you go after that chick?
Would I go after what chick? From the guy I knew on the corner?
Say,
the guy,
okay,
like,
let's
the guy
say,
owns the deli, and I know that he likes the girl. When I see the girl, I got a chance. I meet her at the club, but I know the guy at the deli. Is that what you're asking me?
So, no. My question is, say you go out with your mates. You go out with Lance. Lance is close personal friend. All right,
close,
you're going to stay...
Maccabee.
Yeah, close Maccabee.
Right, he's a Maccabee friend.
But you go out with a friend that's just... Say the gentleman across the hallway in the studio next to us.
He's not a friend. I don't even know him.
Exactly. But you go out for...
Elena, you got to narrow your question down.
No, I'm asking. That's territorial. If you go out with him, you have a nice beer.
Ask Lance.
All right, okay. Lance. So, let's just
see if Lance can grasp your question, then I'll I'll feel better.
You think you'll feel bad?
No, I'll feel better.
No, you'll feel bad because you don't understand it.
Lance, here's a question. Let me condense Elena's question. So, is it bros before hoes or, no, I'm kidding. Do you find, like, if you know you're a good friend of yours is interested in a girl, will you back off? Or will one of you back off for the other kind of thing? They call dibs, okay. And then second question. Now, what if it's just a guy that you know, like you know him, but you know he's not really a friend. Then it's all meant for himself. There it is.
All right.
Elena, does that answer your question?
Yes, it does.
Now, what about you, Elena? Do you cut your female friends down when you see a man that you want? Yes, you do. Look, that's silence. Elena's friends, just so you know, if she sees him, she's going after him.
No. If even if that's not a close friend, see, no, women, like, don't like to tread water. Because, like, we'll
tread. What does that mean, tread water? What does that mean?
Tread water in terms of, like, friendship. Even if I don't think that particular female friend is relatively close.
So you're saying?
I'm not going to tread that water.
Tread that water. Interesting phrase you're using there. Tread that water.
I'll let
212-209-2900. I hope there's some women out there listening. They can help you out, Elena.
I don't need help.
Yeah. Oh, yes, you do. You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift. And we were speaking earlier with Brian DeFlores, who is a artist who went through a UFO encounter, and it changed his life, and he now does art that is transformational. And then we heard from James Marsh, the director of The Theory of Everything, which is a really, really good movie, and he did a really fantastic job, former documentary filmmaker. And we're talking about life is like science fiction, everything from cannabis oil to improve your sex to perfume, packaged sexual devices. Keep in mind, Elena, Lance picked out these stories for you.
I know. I love it.
Just so you know. Lance was like, oh, Elena's coming on. Let me pick up these sexy stories.
I totally appreciate it.
I said, but Lance, no, Lance.
You can be my perfume bottled sex toy.
Uh-oh, there it is. It's Elena's album. Now,
I don't need Fiora when Lance is around.
You have another story for us? Or was that your last story?
Oh, I can switch gears, unless you want to read on.
You have, what does that mean, Elena? That you have another story or you don't have another story?
Horrified. Man finds live maggot inside Kellogg's Nutri-Grain bar. Nick Todd, 22, said he almost vomited after spotted the worm wiggling inside his cereal bar.
We had a mouse inside some meat last week. Go ahead.
Whoa. Disgusting. Nick had taken a bite before he realized there was a maggot inside the cereal bar. The man has described the horrifying moment. He found a live maggot in his cereal bar. Nick Todd, 22, again from London, found the wiggling worm inside a Kellogg's Nutri-Grain bar. Worm. Having already taken a bite, project coordinator Nick was horrified by what he had found. He said he was sitting there on top of the bar, wriggling around a bit. I can't believe there was something in there, let alone that it was still alive. I was nearly sick. Luckily, I had only taken a tiny nibble, of course. That's what he says now, from the corner before I noticed it, but it was quite well camouflaged, so it was lucky I paid attention. It doesn't go out of date until next year, and I don't know how the maggot managed to survive when the packet is supposedly airtight. Nick bought the cereal bar from a supermarket on his way to work on Wednesday with the intention of eating it for his breakfast that day.
That's utterly nasty.
Just he found the maggot still alive, covered in a film on top of the bar.
Oh, maggots.
Nick said it looked normal on
How
the
could
inside.
You ever eat, what brand bar was this?
It was a Kellogg's Nutri-Grain bar, which we've all eaten.
That's nasty. That's so
and
nasty.
I'm not quite sure what the film on top was he referring
the film,
to.
The film is the film. Is from Great Britain? Is this from the Great Britain? If it's from the UK, the film would be the you know the cellophane package.
Yeah, the cellophane plastic. Yes, it then sometimes can then come unglued.
Yes.
Nick said it looked normal on the inside, but I'm a bit concerned. I've eaten some of eggs or something. Quite a quote. It looks normal on the inside, but I'm a bit concerned I've eaten some eggs or something.
Yeah, I'd be like, all right.
I hope my stomach acid will kill them.
I'd like to be set up for life now. There it is. That's the way it is in America, you know. But in the UK, I don't know, they don't sue like they do here. Because they're like, man files a lawsuit. That would be the headline. So, Elena, have you ever bitten into anything and it's been utterly horrifying for you?
Well, I have, but it was called a date.
Stop.
Be nice. No, nothing totally horrific, except my hair, but that's pretty much it.
I understand. Okay, Elena, what's the phone number here?
212-209-2900.
So, Elena, what are you looking forward to in the new year? And how are things in your life?
That's a deep question. I don't know.
So there's nothing you're looking forward to in the coming year?
Well, I found that, you know, not really fruitful to, like, look forward to the next year.
So you don't believe in the power of positive thought or, you know, intention or anything? Take it as it comes.
No, I have intention. I have positive thought. But do I believe in it? Not necessarily.
What's the point of having it if you can't believe in it?
Because you have it.
Yeah, well, you have negative thoughts, too. You could have thoughts of standing up on a chair naked and doing a funky chicken in the middle of the subway. But you don't do it. You don't act on it. It's just a thought.
What I believe in, if you just...
What
I
a relief.
Don't have,
what did you say? Did you say your relief? Okay.
No, what I believe is that if you don't have at least those thoughts, then why take one step in front of the other? Do I believe it, like, helps anything? No.
So you don't find it empowering at all? So you don't really look forward to the coming year? You just kind of roll with it?
I roll, but... You know, I mean, to be positive can only sometimes just bring disappointment.
Interesting. How long have you felt this way?
I don't know. I don't put a time frame on that.
That's interesting. And because you've experienced disappointment, it engenders you to not have expectations. That way you won't feel the pain of disappointment. So it's become a life philosophy to avoid that pain. you disappointed so deeply?
No. Again, if you put, like, degrees on it, then it can, like, stumble you. Or it can, you know, encompass you into a point where there is no, you know, taking that next step forward. And not on, like, a time continuum or frame.
Not on, like, a time continuum.
You just keep going.
So, like that song in Santa Claus is Coming to Town? Put one foot in front of the other.
One foot in front. Yes. You look for you look for that island of misfit toys where you actually fit in.
Is that what you're doing, Elena? Looking for the island of misfit toys where you fit in.
Yeah.
Well, if you listen.
I mean, there's several. I mean, Brian can attest. There's several, obviously, galaxy continuums.
Oh, now you're going to use galaxy continuums. So you yourself are aware of the galaxy continuums and
right.
the difference of them. Have you visited
and
them
don't
as well?
And don't get me wrong. You hit one island of misfit toys and even you don't fit in there.
Have you visited other galaxies, Elena?
I wouldn't say. I don't think I've gone that deep. But I have. I found some islands of misfit toys. And, you know, I stumbled and I even fell off that boat.
All right, and what about you? So you've had some disappointments, but have you ever had any moments of spiritual enlightenment or epiphanies?
I don't think I need that per se. In terms of, like, if I'm going to get it, I should find it for my own. And I shouldn't have to depend on anybody else. So any failure on finding any epiphany would be mine.
I really didn't see how I was giving credit to the epiphany to anybody else, but is that your final answer?
From epiphany, you're saying like it comes from some outside source.
I did not say that.
All right, well, what did you say?
I said any higher states of consciousness or epiphanies. Have you experienced that? Have you ever experienced like some leap of consciousness or awareness, like Brian did?
No, and I think that's probably, again, maybe to answer your question differently, that would be a shortcoming on my end.
What would be a shortcoming? To have it or to not have it?
To not receive any sort of epiphany, no matter what,
so, in other words,
what your belief is or what
never
source
had
you think it was.
You've never had an epiphany, is what you're saying?
No.
Okay. All right. You're an epiphany-less.
I guess so. If you want to, like,
break it, categorize you? Yes.
I'm categorizing you. Terminalize
it? Yes. You're epiphany-less. Elena, epiphany-less Fulgham.
All right. Look.
You'll take that
ease
title?
For E, yeah.
Okay.
Ease for E. So have you had an epiphany?
I've had many epiphanies. I am an epiphanitis himself.
So you're going to take Brian's advice and narrow down your interests?
I'm going to do radio shows that... what's that? You like that track? That's a good track. Is that a good track? It takes you somewhere. Like, instantly, you're on late night radio, you're on night shift, and it's a place that you want to be. Elena, do you know what our website is?
Night shift.
No, it's lifeislikesciencefiction.com.
No,
yeah,
that's
that one, yes. And
that's an epiphany.
You can like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. And you can email us at lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, NITESHIFTZ. So night shift. And if you want to go to our website, we have shows dating back for over 8 years. Within one breath. Elena.
Huh? Yeah.
What are you going to do for New Year's? Do you have plans? What do you usually do besides sit with Orlando?
Fernando.
His
merit. I just typically wander around. I don't really do that.
Do you wander around on New Year's?
Yeah, I like to go see the tree. Actually, this is like the epitome of my life. If you want to like a little like antidote to go along with this whole theme.
Sure.
I went to go see the tree last night.
Okay.
I'm like, I have to do something Christmassy. I went to go see the tree, and I looked up the website to make sure when it was going to be turned off. And, you know, they said midnight. So I show up at 11:45, freezing cold. Oh, they turned it off at 11:30. So I have a blank tree.
Well, that's,
I'm like, this kind of summarizes.
That's a good opening to the film. Like, there she is at the darkened tree. They turned it off early. It's cold. As she's standing there alone.
With my little dog.
With her little dog.
Toto. And you know what? It didn't really matter. Because I was like, well, you know what? I have my camera. Take some pictures.
You felt Christmas anyway.
Yeah, the police were there. They loved the dog. They were happy. Everyone's happy. No, the tree wasn't lit. But, you know, that's symbolic in itself.
And Fernando didn't care.
No, he didn't care. I didn't care. No one cared. It's a tree. It's beautiful. Lights or no. And that's kind of like life is.
But he who speaks of his guilt.
Hello, you're on the air.
Hey.
Yes, who is this?
Hello.
Yeah, you got to turn down your radio.
Yeah, I'm turning it down.
Okay. So what'd you call to say?
Fernando Gray, you know. What's your name? Brian?
Brian is gone, but, you know.
Well, the thing that fascinates me about all these outer space adventures is that they're all, the white man is always at the center of it, you know?
Well, it's his adventure. I mean, you know, it's like male fantasies. They're always about, you know, males getting the girl.
If the man is apparently, he's the only one on the planet.
Well, that's a whole other conversation.
And these tellings of it, you know.
So you don't buy that he met with aliens?
No, I don't.
And then, do you believe that there are aliens, sir?
I wouldn't describe it that way, you know, aliens. I think there are experiences that we get through art, you know, through cinema, especially, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that the conversation he had with the guy about the theory of everything, that it's pretty close to what, you know, how cinema works and how cinema delves into our being and presents other worlds, you know.
So you see cinema as a transformative art form.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I agree with you 100%.
And it comes through perception, you know. It doesn't necessarily come through through vision. It comes through other beings, you know.
We
create this persistence of perception at 186,000 miles a second at the speed of light.
Persistence of perception.
Yeah. How we understand movement and motion. The thing that really takes us to space, you know.
This is true.
But art can be structured in such a way, cinema in particular, can be structured in such a way that you can create this kind of experience in other people, you know, who see the film. That's why you make movies, you know.
Yeah, the idea that you can create an experience that other people, or create some art that other people can experience something emotional or spiritual or physical or even intellectually from, I think is transformative. So I agree with you. What's your name, sir?
Robert.
Robert. And Robert, have you had any epiphanies in your life or transformative experiences where you felt you were enlightened from one moment to the next?
Oh, yeah, sure. I fell 60 feet off the top of a hotel.
Wow.
I broke 18 bones, you know.
Wow, that sounds transformative.
And during that, you know, laying on the sidewalk, you know, didn't touch me, you know. It didn't put me on a desk or anything. Otherwise, that's the only reason I'm alive today, you know. I had to touch me.
Right.
I got the three V's, third vertebrae, you know. That's for the instant
death. I would think once you flirt with death, you start to think about if you made it, that there's a reason why.
Yeah. Except that I don't cover these things cognitively like you do, you know. You see them intellectually, you know.
And
I think there's another level of being.
Well, I don't see myself as an intellectual, but I'm with you.
We all agree, Mike.
You know, Elena, you will be flogged. Okay, well, thank you very much, Robert, for calling. Have you heard the show before?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Have you been listening before? All right. Well, I thank you.
One last experience.
Yes.
I made a film in 1963 called Someday I'll Scream.
Okay.
And it's about a paranoid schizophrenic.
Okay.
It's like you're writing a book, and you tear out the pages of the succeeding narrative, right?
Right.
In other words, you can only experience one page at a time.
Right.
And then you would tell the backstory to his mother, you know, who would come to him in various forms.
All right. Well, listen, we got like 30 seconds left, so you got to wrap it up. You're going to call us next week.
I'll call you again.
Us next week. Well, thank you, Robert. It was very interesting.
Thank you, Robert.
You're tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. You know, I heard a conversation earlier this evening when I went to see the Lord of the Rings movie, The Hobbit, and somebody says, yes, and this professor says that Moses was a schizophrenic. And I think it would be interesting, like, what if this professor proposed, like, all these people who thought they spoke with God were really suffering from some personality disorder, and that's what it all was. And there it is. So, this is Night Shift, Elena.
Michael.
Until next time, Lance.
Thank you, Lance.
Like us on Facebook, NITESHIFT. This is Night Shift.